This is the second part of a recording of a demonstration in Hartford, Connecticut, against the United States government's invasion of Iraq. The two-part rally and march took place at the Capitol Building in Hartford on March 23, 2003. It was sponsored by Connecticut United Against War, a coalition of 35 peace groups from across the state. Part 2 begins with musician Dave Brown improvising a song based on the text of People's Signs as the march returns to the Capitol. Featured speakers for Part 2 were Azam Saeed, former Air Force pilot from Pakistan and Republican critic of Bush administration policy, Dave Ayano of Veterans for Peace and a veteran of the U.S. war in Vietnam, Regina Langhout, a Navy veteran of the Persian Gulf War and now a psychology professor at Wesleyan University, Christopher Alan Dussault, a Catholic worker activist who recently returned from a trip to Iraq, and this was followed by a concluding song by Jill Freeman, vocalist.
And when we give peace a chance, when we all give peace a chance, well, I want to be in that number. When we all give peace a chance, when we free America from the Bush dictatorship, that's a hard one. When we free America from the Bush dictatorship, Lord, I want to be in that number. From dictatorship. Well, this is us being patriotic. Just look at us being patriotic. Well, I want to be in that number. Look at us being patriotic. Stop killing kids. Stop killing now. Gotta stop killing kids right now. Well, I want to be in that number.
We have been asked to caution you that the rules, bylaws, regulations prevent any sale of anything on the Capitol grounds. Now, my understanding is there's no rules for the prevention of sales inside the Capitol. Outside, it is strictly verboten. We just got an account of the number of people on the march. It came to 1,354. And that doesn't count the people that chose to stay behind to sample that wonderful, delicious food that is being served on the other side. Let's give those folks food, not bombs, an outrageously loud round of applause. Okay, just about ready to start with our afternoon program. We have three speakers. Azam, would they please come up? Azam Saeed, Gina Langau, and Chris Allen Dussault. Okay. At this time, we'll start with our speeches. Azam Saeed, please give him a warm welcome.
Yeah, thank you very much, everyone, for being here today. I don't necessarily have a speech, but I have a few points that I would like to mention. And I'm going to talk about, for a change, I'm going to talk about tactics. I think it's very important we understand this and we follow some of the tactics that would make our movement a success. Now, we realize that humankind in general and our nation in particular is at pivotal crossroads today. Strategically, our nation happens to be the group of people that has a decisive say in what the world will look like tomorrow. Hence, it is the mainstream American public that has a gigantic responsibility on its shoulders. Abraham Lincoln enunciated the philosophical foundation of our concept of democracy. Quote, "I am a firm believer in the people. If given the truth, they can be depended upon to meet any national crisis. The great point is to bring them the real facts." End quote. Now, let's not underestimate the intelligence or the sense of justice of our nation. The problem we face is the media that for decades has been serving corporate and special interests. Thus seriously misleading our people. Our media has committed grave treason to our values. It has betrayed our Constitution and the very concept of free speech. The task we have is to undo what the media is doing. And that's a task every one of us will have to share. I'll briefly talk about some tactics, and I request you to think about them and discuss them when you gather in small groups. Instead of when the war makers are looking for targets of opportunities to bomb, we should be looking for portals of opportunity to inform people. And what we have to do is to channel people to where information is. And I'll talk about how we do that. We have to move our people, we have to move the mainstream public from the mainstream media to other sources of information that are readily available today. And every one of us has to make a determination. Every one of us has to say, okay, I will reach out to 10 people, mainstream people who do not know the reality, or I will reach out to 100 or 1,000 in the next 2 weeks. What we have to do involves no convincing, it involves no argument whatsoever, it involves no dogma, and it involves no ideology whatsoever. What we have to do is to let people know that there is information out there and they have access to that information and how they reach that information. For example, the religious leadership in this country is very much with the peace movement. And what we have to, for example, do is to reach out to some of those religious leaders we know and just ask them if it would be okay for their congregations to have the information, to know where they can go to get real information about what's going on in the world. So, for example, I have prepared this sheet of papers that has links to all kinds of newspapers in the world, all kinds of information and news analysis portals in this country and even television channels in this country that they can access on satellite dish network. So our task is to be simply able to convey this information to our people, mainstream people, and then rely upon their values, because if there is one thing we can count on the intelligence of our people and their sense of justice. So please feel free to take these flyers for me. I am also going to circulate this information on the listservs that I belong to. Please change it, modify it, and circulate it to the mainstream public, that there is information out there that our mainstream media would not cover. I would like to quote Thomas Jefferson. This is what he said, I believe, at the end of the 18th century. Quote, "If a nation expects to be ignorant and free in a state of civilization, it expects what never was and never will be. If we are to guard against ignorance and remain free, it is the responsibility of every American to be informed." End quote. And in order to neutralize the toxicity of war makers, peacemakers have to follow the antidote prescribed by Justice Brandeis. Quote, "Sunshine is the best disinfectant," end quote. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Assam. Yeah, it was very interesting. Most of you probably noticed a few days ago, when the day the war started, they were busy in Congress trying to cut veterans' benefits. Pretzel logic, if there ever was any. There's a long sordid history in this country of fueling and financing the war machine and dumping on the people who put their lives on the line. And this certainly was true with many Vietnam veterans, as most likely will be also true of the people fighting this war. It certainly was true of the Gulf War veterans. Today, we have somebody who is a Vietnam veteran, Dave Yano, and he will be reading a speech, or a statement to be more accurate, representing the Vietnam Vets and Veterans for Peace. Please give Dave a really warm welcome.
Thank you, and good afternoon. I'm so happy to see the amount of people here at 1,354. That makes a statement right there. Before I read this statement, I have to tell you a little bit about myself. I'm the son of a career Army officer who served over 30 years in the United States Army. I graduated from high school in 1969. And I enlisted in the United States Army. I was what they call RA all the way, regular Army. I volunteered for Vietnam. And when I went to Vietnam, I was an American fighting man. When I came home, I was a human being. And that's why I still don't quite feel at home. This statement is on the web under a site called Veterans Call to Conscience. I'm going to read it to you. And the words are very heavy. We are veterans of the United States Armed Forces. We stand with the majority of humanity, including millions, in our own country in opposition to the United States all-out war on Iraq. We span many wars and eras, have many political views, and we all agree that this war is wrong. Many of us believe serving in the military was our duty, and our job was to defend this country. Our experiences in the military caused us to question much of what we were taught. Now we see our real duty is to encourage you, as members of the U.S. Armed Forces, to find out what you are being sent to fight and die for, and what the consequences of your actions will be. We call upon you, the active duty and reservists, to follow your conscience and do the right thing. In the last Gulf War, as troops, we were ordered to murder from a safe distance. We destroyed much of Iraq from the air, killing hundreds of thousands, including civilians. We remember the road to Basra, the highway to death, where we were ordered to kill fleeing Iraqis. We bulldozed trenches, burying people alive. Massive use of pesticides, experimental drugs, burning chemical weapons, depots and oil fires combined to create a toxic cocktail affecting both the Iraqi people and the Gulf War veterans today. 1 in 4 Gulf War veterans is disabled. During the Vietnam War, we were ordered to destroy Vietnam from the air and on the ground. At My Lai, we massacred over 500 women, children, and old men. This was not an aberration. It's how we fought the war. We used Agent Orange on the enemy and then experienced firsthand its effects. We know what post-traumatic stress disorder looks like and feels and tastes like because the ghosts of over 2 million men, women, and children will still haunt our dreams. Some of us are still taking our lives after returning home from the war. There is no honor in murder. This war is murder by another name. When, in an unjust war, an errant bomb drop kills a mother and her child, it is not collateral damage, it is murder. When, in an unjust war, a child dies of dysentery because a bomb damaged a sewage treatment plant, it is not destroying enemy infrastructure, it is murder. When, in an unjust war, a father dies of a heart attack because a bomb disrupted the phone lines so he could not call an ambulance, it is not neutralizing command and control facilities, it is murder. When, in an unjust war, 1,000 poor farmer conscripts die in a trench defending a town they've lived in their whole lives, it is not victory, it is murder. There will be veterans leading protests against this war on Iraq and your participation in it. During the Vietnam War, thousands of Vietnam and in the U.S. refused to follow orders. Many resisted and rebelled. Many became conscientious objectors, and others went to prison rather than bear arms against the so-called enemy. During the last Gulf War, many GIs resisted in various ways and for many different reasons. Many of us came out of these wars and joined with all of you in the anti-war movement. If the people of the world are ever to be free, there must come a time when being a citizen of the world takes precedence over being the soldier of a nation. Now is that time. When orders come to ship out, your response will profoundly impact the lives of millions of people in the Middle East and here at home. Your response will help us set the course of the future. You will have choices all along the way. Your commanders want you to obey. We urge you to think. We urge you to make choices based on your conscience. If you choose to resist, we will support you and be with you and stand with you because we have come to understand that our real duty is to the people of the world and our common future.
Our next speaker is also a veteran of the Gulf War. She's also a professor at Wesleyan University. Her name is Gina Longhout. Please give her a warm welcome.
Thank you. I'm going to read to you a letter that was published in the Middletown Press, a letter to the editor, and I tell you this to let you know that you can do this too, and you can have your voice heard in the paper. They do print these things. I am a Navy veteran, hospital corpsman, second class of the first Gulf War, and I do not support the current war in Iraq. There seem to be a minority of people who think that being anti-war means not supporting our troops, but this is not the case. Many people who protest against the war are protesting against our government's aggressive and preemptive attack policies. Troops do not make policy decisions, so it is incorrect to say that the protest is against them or unsupportive of them.
Yeah!
Instead, The protest is against Bush and our elected officials in the House and Senate who support this war. Also, I believe it's accurate to say that most people who are anti-war see the link between the violence our nation is undertaking abroad and the violence faced by working class Americans due to American domestic policies. Like me, people who join the military tend to be from working class backgrounds. Also like me, many who join see the military as the only way to get money for college or get free training for a technical job. The risk of these benefits could be one's life, but the other alternatives for education and training are so slim that it is a risk many are willing to take. Many who are against this war make this connection and know that protesting against the war is more than just this. We see the classism and racism that the military can opportunistically use to their advantage when recruiting. We therefore support our troops in the most patriotic way possible. We want all people, especially working class people, to have access to affordable education, the ability to get jobs that pay a living wage, and comprehensive, affordable health care. We don't want our sons, daughters, mothers, and fathers to come back from this war and have flashbacks, nightmares, and physical symptoms that the military denies are related to their service. We do not want our troops to be subjected to the poisoning uranium that we left in Iraq after the first Gulf War and continue to leave as we wage war. Indeed, this depleted uranium continues to have crippling effects on the people who live in Iraq. We do not want our veterans to have children with birth defects because of the radioactive materials used in U.S. weaponry. We do not want our family members and friends to come home, if they come home at all, and need services that are not available because of cuts to the Veterans Administration. Cuts that are made because of the cost of this war. It is important for us all to remember that we do not have to internalize Bush's rhetoric. You're either for us or against us. I am against this war, and I am for our troops to come home psychologically and physically sound. Stop the war, fight against racism, fight against classism.
Couldn't put it any better than that. Thank you, Gina. Our next speaker, Chris Allen Dussault, has returned recently from Iraq. He is a member of the peace team of Voices in the Wilderness, and many of you in the Hartford area know him for his work in regard to the Hartford Catholic Worker House. The FBI basically rewarded his efforts by paying him a visit recently, which he will talk about more frequently. Keep in mind what Teresa Younger said earlier in that regard. It's my pleasure to introduce Chris Allen Dussault. Chris?
Assalamu alaikum. Earlier today, I spoke with my friends in Baghdad. They described the situation to me as a nightmare of constant explosions day and night throughout the city. The hotel I was in just 10 days ago shakes with every blast, and one large window has been blown out. My friend Abu Hassan reports that all the windows in his home have been blown out. He said when he returned home from work, his wife and children were sitting in the middle of the living room, surrounded by plaster and glass, covering their heads. As of this morning, Western media outlets report between 68 and 98 civilians have been killed. For a continuous tracking of these figures, go to iraqbodycount.org. One word. One of the war planes destroying Baghdad is the B-2 bomber, which carries 16 2,000-pound JDAM bombs. As these bombs explode in Baghdad, everyone within a 100-yard radius is killed, and people up to a half a mile away can be injured by shrapnel and flying debris. This, my friends, is the effect of a so-called smart bomb when it hits its intended target. When these idiot savants of mass destruction miss their target, the result is more horrific and more fatal. On January 25th of 1999, one of these missiles roared past the kitchen window of my friend Umhaida and exploded just down the street. The Pentagon has reported that the missile missed its target by several miles. The intended target was a fertilizer factory in the isolated and incredibly poor village of Abu Fulus. Other missiles launched that day did reach this neighborhood. The factory was left unscathed, while 5 women and 5 children were killed and 30 seriously injured, including 14-year-old Isra, who had her right arm amputated at her shoulder. The missile that landed in Umhaida's neighborhood killed 1 woman and 5 children, including Umhaida's 6-year-old son. Another 64 were seriously injured. Weeks after the bombing, I interviewed Umhaida, and she told me, quote, "When I came to the house, it had fallen down. I go to see my babies. Horrible noise and shaking, and I'm in the street, and there is smoke and dust, and all of the people are mad. I searched for my babies. I searched for them. I see them in the ground, in the dust and rubble. Their faces are facing the dirt on the ground. His face is full of blood. Hide her," I shout. "Hide her, hide her." He does not speak anything. The other cries, "Mama, mama." Pieces of missile are in his head. His fingers are gone or hanging. His body, from head to toe, are full of pieces of the missile. End quote. In his State of the Union address during the first Gulf War, the first President Bush proclaimed, quote, "We have within our reach the promise of a renewed America. We can find meaning and reward by serving some purpose higher than ourselves, a shining purpose, the illumination of 1,000 points of light. It is expressed by all who know the irresistible force of a child's hand." Umhaida's younger son, Mustafa, survived the bombing of his neighborhood and is awaiting in Jordan for permission to come to America to have the remaining shards of missile removed from his body. Unfortunately, his left hand was partially blown off by the missile. Whereas the first Bush spoke of the irresistible force of a child's hand, Mustafa knows the irresistible force of an American missile. Instead of 1,000 points of light, that son of a Bush, currently in the White House, has delivered to Baghdad 1,000 missiles a night, leaving behind 1,000 neighborhoods of blight. At a cost of $1 million per missile, the appointed but not elected president is spending $1 billion a day to lay Baghdad in waste and leave inner city America in ruins. That son of a Bush must be stopped. With this war on the people of Iraq, our nation has been turned inside out. The Bush regime is guilty of much that it loudly condemns. American forces have invaded another country without provocation. American warplanes are dropping bombs with the blast capacity of bombs that were dropped on Hiroshima and Nagasaki. There are mushroom clouds over the sky of Baghdad. We are using de facto weapons of mass destruction. Civil liberties have been threatened and in cases taken away. Earlier this week, the FBI came knocking on my door because I simply went to Iraq to get my friend Haider and her son Mustafa out of harm's way so that she would not lose another child to an American missile, so that Mustafa could return the parts of missile still in his body to that son of a Bush. Earlier in the week, excuse me, and let us not forget the hundreds and perhaps thousands of people who have been abducted by our government and sent to Guantanamo Bay. Beware, my friends. A bill under consideration in Congress, this so-called Patriot Act 2, would grant the government the authority to kidnap natural-born American citizens, strip us of our citizenship, and deport us to a third country, all without access to a phone call or a lawyer. Elements in our government are trying to legalize the practice of disappearing dissenters. Is this the America that we love? Is this the land of the free? Good God, no! With every life taken in Iraq, the American soul suffers another blow. The American dream has become a living nightmare for the children of Baghdad and Basra, Medellin and Pyongyang, New Haven and Hartford. Let us pray, friends, for the soul of our nation and the lives of our Iraqi sisters and brothers. And everybody knows the refrain to this, and please shout it.
Because what I'm talking about here is...
What is it good for? That are civil disobedience minded, there will be civil disobedience training 4:30 to 7:30 at the First Presbyterian Church right over here at Capitol Avenue, and then 7:40 Spokes Council meeting for Monday's CD action at the First Presbyterian Church at Capitol Avenue. Now for your listening pleasure, I want to introduce to you Jill Friedman, singing a song.
This is for all of you so brave to be here right now. Please sing with me if you know it. I'm gonna look to the people for courage. I'm gonna look to the people for courage in the hard times coming ahead. We're gonna sing and shout. We're gonna work it out in the hard times coming ahead. With people's courage. With people's courage. With people's courage. We can make it.
Sisters and comrades, we have raised over $1,700 to further our efforts. Give yourselves a round of applause. This concludes the first, second, and many rallies, demonstrations, strikes, and speaking against this illegal war. We want to thank you. Power to the people. Yeah! Next week,
at the Boston Common. There's going to be a massive rally up there.
Noon.
Exactly. If you can get up there, fine. And look, for those of you who can't get up there, this certainly is not going to be the last one here. We don't know when the next one will be, but keep your ears open. Be ready to come and tell everybody you know. Peace.